serving veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our chat today with 92-year-old Joe Hardin of Hillmar, California, originally from Marin County, north of San Francisco. We heard early on how he saw the Golden Gate Bridge under construction and actually walked across it before it was open to vehicles. Another historic sight he witnessed in 1945 was not as pleasant. I do want to warn you that some of what we're going to hear is pretty gruesome and certainly not stuff you hear every day, so I'll let you use your own discernment as we work our way toward the scene at Hiroshima after the atomic bomb was dropped.
The Jeep I had was, when I went into the motor pool, it was number 11. It was supernumerary. You know what that means? If any other Jeep is out of service, you take over the job. Like if the colonel's Jeep goes out of service, you drive for the colonel. If S1 needs a Jeep, you just flit around from one job to the next. Right. Well, we tore all over those islands going in and finding these arms and stuff so they could start getting rid of them. Stars and Stripes, they brought in a reporter and a photographer. They wanted to go in where the atomic bomb dropped, and we went in. I drove the Jeep. They took pictures. We went into a hospital. There was a Japanese policeman that could speak a little English. The hospital walls were plastered just like they were in any hospital in this country. It was that white plaster. But when you looked at the buildings, and these were the only buildings that were standing. The rest of the buildings were blown flat because their buildings over there are made out of wood and paper. And there's blood splattered all over those walls. They couldn't figure out, you know, what happened, how the blood splatter all over. And the shards, they got it from this policeman, the shards of glass blew and hit the people in the hospital and just tore them to pieces. And their blood blew all over. And we went to a bridge that went over this little river right by where that dome target was at. And it had concrete sides. It was concrete curved bridge, and the sides were laying out. And they thought with the blast hitting that bridge blew the sides out. And the policeman told them, no, it was people. People trying to run away from the fire. So many people pushing. They pushed the sides out on that bridge. It was hard to believe. But I drove them in there. They took a lot of pictures, and I wrote down a lot of stuff, and I took them back. Well, a photographer and a reporter from Stars and Stripes, which was the Army newspaper.
Well, and those photos would go around the world, and all kinds of people would see them, and it was what made that atomic bomb real to them, the power of it, the magnitude of it, the destructive ability of it. But you saw it before they did, before those pictures were published. What was that like? I mean, you're a 19-year-old kid seeing all this.
Well, the thing that really got me was 99% of the town was flat. There was nothing there but kind of reddish dirt. But the Japanese were already planting gardens. Over there, everybody has a garden, you know. But there wasn't too many people in the town. But we'd pass little plots of ground where you could see things were growing in lines, so you knew somebody planted it. I wondered if that soil wasn't radioactive, and eating that might have caused some damage to those people. But I never knew.
Well, that was my other question. I know you didn't spend a ton of time there, but have you ever had that thought yourself? Hey, was I exposed to some radio?
I've thought of that a couple of times because we didn't know. I didn't know. I just had that number 11 Jeep and supernumerary, that's your job. Take these two guys in. They wanted to go in there. So I don't know if we were supposed to go in there or not. I didn't know. But I was told to take these two guys where they want to go. So I drove them in there.
Again, every question I ask, I'm just looking for your sincere answer, and I never want to put a thought in your mind. But I'm wondering if being there at age 19 and witnessing that aftermath, if that gives you any perspective on the use of nuclear weapons and whether that should ever happen again.
Well, those bombs, I think, weren't near what they've got today. And my feelings about that, if we ever get into a nuclear war, it could end this whole world. Because that is just a chain reaction explosion. And what if it hits the right combination that all these molecules start a chain reaction? Couldn't that go around the world? And we might be another sun.
And on the flip side of that, I've met a lot of guys, and I'm sure your case is just like theirs. I mean, you're in hand-to-hand combat in the jungles of the Philippines until they drop these bombs and end the war. And otherwise, you would have been probably making a different kind of landing in Japan with them firing back at you. Have you ever thought about that and felt like those bombs maybe saved your life?
Well, I think those bombs probably changed everybody's life in the world. Realization of it is that if people could see that and see what was there and what was left, the only buildings there that stood up were the ones were concrete, and they were shells. There wasn't a window left. Doors and everything were, but the rest of the country in there, of course, they don't build like we do here, but I don't think our buildings would hold up under that shock wave that came from that. Everything was gone except steel or concrete.
Did it almost seem impossible that something like that could happen? I mean, did that blow your mind, for lack of a better phrase?
Well, looking at that, I don't see how any house, unless it was really made out of concrete, but they had concrete buildings, a regular house like we're sitting in right now, it wouldn't withstand that shock wave. No, these houses would be blown to smithereens. They might have the fires after, but you could see the ground over there where the, you know how ground turns kind of a reddish after a hot fire? That was all over there. Every place you looked, the ground looked like that.
You mentioned the Japanese prisoner who came and helped you guys with your Jeeps. And when I walked in, that's one of the first things you showed me, is you have a photo of yourself with this Japanese man. And you said something that I don't know if I've ever heard anyone else say to me. Because by the very nature of the assignment, there's usually not any survivors. You said that guy was a kamikaze pilot. Help me make sense of that.
Well, kamikaze pilots over there, they only gave them one-way gas because they drove the plane into their target. Well, he ran out of gas. He landed in the sea, and he was picked up by the Navy and made a prisoner till the end of the war. Now, I don't know how long he was a prisoner, but they took him and told him that they'd give him a job. So they sent him with us to help us repairing our Jeeps and our equipment. Well, at first, I couldn't speak Japanese, and he couldn't speak English, but we'd show him what to do, and they'd do it. Him and I got to liking each other. So I learned some Japanese, and he learned some English. And at one time, they didn't have a lot to eat, so I'd get him some of our chow, and he told me after he tried to eat it, he says he couldn't eat it, it would make him sick. We fiddled around with that for a while. He says, finally explained to me, just get me some rice. And they ate rice 3 meals a day over there.
Do you remember his name?
Hiroyuki Tamaguchi.
And I'm guessing, I mean, if you have a couple pictures of him on your mantle over here, that those have to be some good memories to look at that picture. What do you think about when you look at that photo of him from 73 years ago?
Well, he wanted me to get him to come to this country, but there was no way I could do it. And I often wonder what happened to him. The Japanese people, as far as one-on-one, they were good people. I got along with them fine.
Well, yeah, and here again, I mean, you're still a teenager. You didn't turn 20. I guess you probably turned 20 while you were hanging out with him in December of 45. But you said you were gung-ho to sign up because you wanted to go back and get them back for what they did to America. How much did it maybe change or soften your perspective to have that one-on-one time with him?
Well, you know, when I first got there, I didn't want to, you know, go after him because the war was over. I just wondered if they, and I guess they knew, because when we first landed there, the people were gone. There was nobody but policemen standing on corners. But it wasn't very long that we got along. I didn't feel I had anything against them anymore. You know, they weren't trying to fight us. We weren't trying to fight them. And for the most part, I got along real good with them. A lot of things I didn't understand, but I was privileged through him to meet some of the other people. I couldn't speak to them, but I went into their houses and saw how they lived. One thing I'll say about the Japanese, they have about the cleanest houses you ever wanted to see. And their houses are made out of wooden paper.
Was he about the same age as you, or do you think he was older or younger?
He was about my age, maybe a little younger. I'm not sure, but I never did ask him his age.
So it's not impossible that he could still be alive in Japan or elsewhere.
Yeah.
If he were, if you knew that he was still around and you had a chance to say something to him 70 plus years later, what do you think you'd say to him?
Boy, I don't know, because he was a good friend. He helped us, you know, everything we asked him to do. And if anybody done anything wrong, any one of the other Japanese, they were pretty harsh on their own people. Now, he was a sergeant. I was a sergeant. They call a sergeant a gunzo. If one of the other fellows that we had working for us would do anything wrong, boy, he'd jump on them so fast. They'd stand up in front of him. What he was telling them, I don't know, but they'd stand like they were at attention. And if they didn't give him the right answer, he slapped them.
Was it hard for you when you came back home? Was it hard to adjust to being a civilian again?
At the beginning, yeah, it was. I didn't know if I was going to treat people right or not.
Well, I don't want to leave anything important out. So if there's anything else that, you know, that you want to share, feel free. But I do want to make sure I say thank you. Thank you for serving our country and for telling us a unique story that only you could tell us. Is there something, as you look back on your service in World War II, that you would say you're most proud of or most appreciative of now?
Well, In a way, I would have liked to go back to Japan, but I got married and raised a family. But I learned to speak a little bit of the language. I can count in it. Ichi-ni san-si go roko hichi hachi kuju. So I had a good time over there. I went out and I sent my mother a silk obi and a kimono. And when I went to buy this, you go to their house, and it's usually the man of the house will sell these silk objects that the women of the house make. Their way of dealing is so much different than ours, because they think you're odd if he tells you a price he wants on something, you pay it and leave. He wants you to come back two or three times. You drink a little sake with him, and you'll finally buy it for probably half of what he asked. But that's the way they are. I got along good over there. I really got along good.
Well, you just mentioned your mother, and made me wonder what it was like coming home and seeing her again, because her first husband had died because of being gassed in World War I, and now she's had a son out there and probably more dangerous situations than even she realized. So what was that homecoming like for you?
My mother and I was a bit spoiled, let's face it. We lived with my grandfather and grandmother, so it was their house. My mother really, in a way, she had some things to say to raise me, but the boss man of the house was my grandfather.
Well, I got one more question for you. You know, you mentioned earlier you don't understand what the kids today are doing on these phones that they carry around everywhere. Is there something you think they should understand about World War II and what you and 16 million other Americans in uniform and a whole country behind them back here, what you all accomplished?
Well, I don't think they teach history in high school anymore. I don't know. And I wonder what all they really teach, because I've taken three of my great-grandsons and I gave them a little problem that they should have been able to figure out real easy, and none of them could. Now, these are kids that two of them were already out of high school. One of them was still in high school. But they couldn't mathematically figure out something. They can figure it out by using these Kindles, but they got to know how to use that. They can't do it in their head or with paper and pencil. And I wonder what happens when the lights go out. And what I ask them, I says, if you're driving down the highway at 60 miles an hour, how many feet do you cover in 1 second?
Well, so there's a test you can give yourself as you listen today, but we're about out of seconds. Don't forget to check out the photos and video of Mr. Harden online at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. I'm Paul Leffler, hoping you'll join us again next time when we're reminded once more through the stories of our veterans that freedom is not free.